And there's definitely people moving out of banks. They've been moving out of banks to even treasuries. Because, I mean, you can get more money on a treasury bill than you can on a bank CD. So people are moving out of banks to treasuries, money market funds. But they're also, as you say, clearly putting some money into gold. We're beginning to see that the Fed cannot kill inflation and stop a recession or a crisis. They can't do all that. And I think gold is going to continue to be very strong for that reason.
Here at Liberty and Finance, we're licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. We are standing by the inventory, ready to make sure you get what you need, even into the wee hours of night and on weekends, because preparedness doesn't stop. Call us 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.
Hey everyone, this is Elijah K. Johnson with Liberty and Finance. And back with us today is Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you, especially in these, I guess, exciting times with three banks failing over pretty much over the weekend there and last week, two of them being the second and third largest bank failures in the U.S. ever. And now we're seeing major issues with Credit Suisse and the Swiss National Bank essentially offering a bailout of over $50 billion equivalent there. Your perspective on what is happening right now on in the banking sector and how it is impacting the markets?
Yeah, okay. Gosh, that's a huge question. I mean, obviously, I think it's important people realize what caused the banking problems, I'm talking about the U.S. now, is not so much the fundamental cause, it's not so much monetary tightening as, in fact, monetary easing. So when you have a long period of excessive monetary easing, excessively loose monetary policy, including interest rates, you know, zero, lower bound, you're going to get distortions. You're going to get people borrowing money that for marginal projects. You're going to get, again, marginal acquisitions, and you're going to get people stretching for yield. People who shouldn't be stretching for yield, whether it's the old age pension, you know, the old age pensioner living on limited means, or whether it's a bank or insurance company or pension fund, or someone who's actually meant to be looking after your assets. And so that's where the fundamental fault lies, where the origin of this lies. And so you had an issue, as I think everybody knows now, with the Silicon Bank. You had a mismatch in duration. You got short-term deposits, but they were going longer term on their bonds in order to try and get some yield. And then, of course, when rates start to go up, all those bonds go underwater. And I think everybody knows that, you know, banks can classify some of their holdings as hold to maturity, in which case they don't have to mark to market. So there were real but unrealized, but still real losses going on and getting worse, but not being reported because they don't have to report them. Until at some point, you know, they had to sell some of the bonds, and suddenly everybody wakes up and says, wow, you know, they're taking a loss on their treasuries. What's going on here? So, you know, when we look at them, and Credit Suisse, of course, has been a slow motion train wreck for a long time. So I don't think that's just something that came to the fore because of the problems in the U.S., but fundamentally, there was no connection. It was just the emotion or psychology of the market. You know, what's interesting to me is that obviously we had a reaction in the market, particularly with the banks and financial stocks. But you know, what's astonishing to me, up until 2 days ago, at any rate, we don't, the latest numbers for the bull and bear index, we've still got significantly more bulls and bears. We've only got, depending on what index you're looking at, the intelligence indicator, I think they call it, or the American Association of Individual Investors, Bull Bear Index, and so on. But depending on the index you look at, investors are still only, and I'm talking this week, only 25% bearish. That strikes me as astonishing. And then another indicator, you look at analyst consensus estimates on the S&P. We talked about this before. The S&P is trading at almost 18 times earnings multiple, which is not an extreme high for the last 20 years, but it's still above average. With everything that's going on in the market, the analysts, I'm just looking at the numbers now, the latest numbers, the analyst consensus estimate for S&P earnings for the next 12 months is down less than 1%. Now, does that make sense to you? They may be right, of course, but at the very, very minimum, I think we can say that they're not factoring in any significant risk. So to me, the risk in the market remains very, very much on the downside because of a complacency among most investors, and also because of the numbers, the valuations that are being put on the market. And we're not accounting for the possibility of slower earnings this year.
No, it seems like, as you mentioned, and as you've mentioned before previously on interviews with us, the impact of rising rates has not yet fully been felt. And it seems like rising rates were a significant factor of Silicon Valley Bank going under because they had to, you know, sell their treasuries at a loss there. Do you see further bank failures or further issues in the system based on, you know, the Fed just continuing to hold to high interest rates?
Yeah, I don't know enough about the banking system to sort of make a sensible analysis there. But there's no question that there are institutions out there, whether they're banks or insurance companies or pension funds or whatever, there are institutions out there that will be hurt by rising rates. No question about that. And, you know, we talked about the lag and, things like housing and automobiles, the impact is seen immediately because they're very, very interest rate sensitive. But again, just what I said about Silicon Valley, how you buy bonds, but if you hold them to maturity, you don't have to mark a market. So the deterioration has been happening over the last 9 months while rates are going up. But the impact isn't felt until some event, which, you know, someone starts taking their money out, they get more money taken out, they have to sell some bonds, they sell them at a loss. And that's what we're seeing now. So yes, absolutely, Elijah. I think there are enormous, enormous problems in the system that we are just not seeing at the moment. But if interest rates continue to go up or continue to stay high for a long time. Remember, Powell's been talking about we may not continue to raise for much, but we'll have high rates on a consistent basis, you know, persistently high rates. We're going to start seeing trouble. And again, I mean, you only have to think of a corporation. A corporation that borrowed a lot of money at you know, when rates were at zero. So a good quality corporation maybe borrowed at, you know, 5% or 4.5% or something. And then, you know, they did certain things with the money. Maybe they bought back stock. But whatever they did with the money, they didn't sit it in a bank account, a money market fund. It's gone. It's been spent somehow, whether for good reason or for bad reason, on capital investment, an acquisition, whatever. And so when that bond matures, they're going to have to roll it over. Most corporations are going to have to roll that money over. That's not going to happen for another 12 months, maybe. But the problem is still there, and we're going to have fundamental problems with marginal companies if rates stay where they are.
No, it seems like what we're seeing as well is people, there's a flight to safety among investors to gold. Gold is, you know, 1950 as we record this on Friday here. Here at Miles Franklin, we've seen incredible demand for the physical metal. So your perspective on this, how people are seemingly trying to get out of, you know, the currency or get out of the banks and fly to safe havens.
Yeah, I think there's two things going on. With regard to the stock market, there's still a great deal of complacency, but there's certainly an increased desire for some kind of insurance. And there's definitely people moving out of banks. They've been moving out of banks to even treasuries, because, I mean, you can get more money on a treasury bill than you can on a bank CD. So people are moving out of banks to treasuries, money market funds. But they're also, as you say, clearly putting some money into gold and other safe havens. I read something recently about cryptos up as a safe haven. I hope I don't get hate mail on this. I wouldn't put, you know, I wouldn't put my insurance money into crypto. But you're seeing people moving out of the banks and into other things that they consider insurance or safe. I mean, the Japanese yen, the Swiss franc, which are traditional safe haven monies, currencies, as well as the dollar, of course, you know, everything like that has moved up.
Definitely. And do you see that to continue, or what is your forecast going forward, given the greater turmoil in the system right now?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, these things never go up in a straight line, of course, but I've been saying for a year now, when people have been asking me why gold has, you know, why hasn't gold moved more with every, you know, inflation and everything else? And my answer always was that gold will start to move when people realize that the Fed basically can't control. The Fed can't kill inflation and stop a recession at the same time. And I think we've reached that point. I mean, it's pretty clear when you saw what the Fed did last weekend. Basically, in 10 minutes, they wiped out, you know, half of the QT that they've been doing in the last 12 months. And they hadn't really been doing that much to begin with. You know, the Fed balance sheet was just a little under $9 trillion. They didn't even bring it down to 8.3 at the low. That's less than 8%. When you think that the Fed balance sheet was less than $4 trillion, that's less than half only 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, 3.5 years ago, sorry, 2019. I don't think one can call that particularly aggressive action on the QT side. And now suddenly they've just reversed it. This reminds me very much, frankly, of, again, Jerome Powell back in September of 2019, when the Fed balance sheet had stopped going up and was slowly going down, I don't know if you remember, and then we had the repo issue, and suddenly, this was before COVID, everybody blames COVID and says you've got to give the Fed a pass because of COVID, but the balance sheet started shooting up again 4 months, 5 months before COVID hit the US. And frankly, in September, I'm not even sure that people even realized it was going to be a big deal. So it's nothing to do with COVID. The problem is when there's a crisis or deemed crisis, the Fed knows only one medicine, and that is ease money. We're beginning to see that the Fed cannot kill inflation and stop a recession or a crisis. They can't do all that. And I think gold is going to continue to be very strong for that reason. And again, as we know, investors in the US, institutional and retail, tend to be very underweight gold right now. So the potential for, you know, institutions in the U.S. have about 0.5% of their assets in gold. Long-term averages are between 2 and 4%. So even if they go from 0.5% to 1%, you know, which will still be under half the long-term average, that's a significant inflow into the market.
It is very significant. And as we're, you know, talking about how there's definitely cracks in the system right now, I'm seeing that, you know, even First Republic Bank is having issues, it sounds like. So that's number five on the list there after Credit Suisse. But if we continue to see issues here, and you're saying that also the stock market is showing surprisingly good strength right now, even though there's issues, if we do see a rollover in the stock market, do you anticipate a momentary pullback in the gold sector and the miners?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised looking at it right now. You look at how much gold has gone up and, you know, where are we just in the last 3 weeks? It's gone up about 17%. You know, things don't move up or down in straight lines. So I think we would have to say that gold is vulnerable to a pause. I'm not sure we're going to get it immediately, frankly. The action today is very telling because often on a Friday ahead of a weekend, people like to balance their books a little bit and they like to lock in profits. If you've had a very good profit during the week, you know, you bought the S&P when it was at this low, you want to sell on the Friday so you don't hold over the weekend. The fact that gold is continuing to move up today, I think is a compelling sign. We don't know what the Fed's going to do next week, frankly. I have my guesses, but there's always a possibility that Powell will raise rates and Powell will be very hawkish in the press conference, saying inflation remains the number one, you know, the number one issue. That would probably see gold come back a little bit. But with regard to the stock market, yeah, if we see a sharp, short-term sharp decline or crash, whatever you want to call it, in the stock market, then history will tell us that the gold stocks will come down as well. But history will also tell us that the gold stocks, gold and the gold stocks, tend to be the first to recover after a market decline. And I don't know if we've talked about this before, but if you go back to 2008, the gold stocks actually were falling before the S&P. The gold stocks bottomed before the S&P bottomed, and the gold stocks were already up. They were already up by 100% before the S&P bottomed. So, and that's a typical pattern. We saw that in 1987 and so on. So if they do decline, they will probably bounce back sooner and faster.
And as for the mining sector, are there any particular sectors within there or any particular kinds of stocks you're more bullish on right now, like exploration development, the major miners, the juniors, your perspective?
Well, I think one key would be, do they have a strong balance sheet? Because if we have more trouble in the financial system, people are going to be really focused on balance sheets and the ability to raise more capital, if it's needed, to raise more capital at a reasonable rate. I'm really looking at everything. I mean, some of the major miners, again, we've talked about this. The major miners are always the first to move. You know, if you're an ordinary everyday investor or a generalist fund or whatever it is, you want a little bit of exposure to gold and you go to your stockbroker, say, I want a little bit of gold. He doesn't tell you to buy Ajax Exploration. He tells you to buy Newmont or Barrick or Agnico or something like that, or a GDX. So those will be the first to move. They always are. And we're seeing that clearly this week. But frankly, you know, some of the exploration companies are very, very undervalued right now. So if they have strong balance sheets, that's the key. Do they have a strong balance sheet? I think there's some very compelling buys among that sector.
Now, going forward here, I think a lot of people are concerned about the financial system. What would you say as maybe what people should be looking at right now? And if people are looking more for safety, what should they be looking at?
Yeah. I think it's okay to keep, some cash in the banks. We've forgotten, as a society, we've forgotten that the onus on due diligence is on us. We somehow think that other people will take care of it. and the government will bail us out if we make a wrong decision. So, I mean, I think we should look at the banks that we do business with. Probably a good idea to keep under the FDIC limit, which for most of us isn't a problem. And but if a bank is offering significantly higher rates than other banks, and you can't see a good reason for that, you have to ask the question, why are they doing it and how can they afford to do it? But other than that, I mean, I think the places to be are really in physical gold, physical silver first. That's the foundation. And then be very, very, and then the gold stocks I like, and be very cautious in the broad market, very cautious.
I think a very good point you made is, you know, take responsibility. Don't expect someone else to bail you out or to protect you in this environment. Very good there. Adrian, any last thoughts before I let you go, and where can our viewers find you online?
Well, I'll get, it's Adrian Day Asset Management, Adrian Day Asset Management, all one word, .com. No, I mean, I think, again, I always say to people, don't panic. You know, you never want to. This is probably not the end of the world, just like 2008 wasn't the end of the world and 1999 wasn't the end of the world. So the biggest mistake most investors make is to panic in reaction to things after it's too late. Because, and I've seen this so many times without, you know, I don't want to be arrogant about it or anything, but by the time I get lots of clients call me saying they can't stand the losses anymore, they want to go to cash, that's probably a sign that we're very close to a bottom. So I think we want to be cautious in new buying, but we don't want to panic in reaction to things.
Fantastic. Adrian, well, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your insights and God bless.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us. Discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH, or electronic check. Money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.